Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcasts while driving. You must be getting bored now because I have to keep on going off to therapy. I take my glasses off. I don't need my reading glasses to ride. So I have to go off and do therapy, whatever it is, boxing, balancing on balls, all that type of stuff. I don't know. Sometimes I think I'm really improving, and sometimes I'm not, but when it's measured, I'm just doing very ever so slow improvement in fitness and stuff like that. And, hopefully building up the number of podcasts per day and various things like that. So, what I want to do covering this one is just nitty-gritty developments. Now, I'm building the Einstein pendulum. Well, as I'm reading a bit more about it, I'm not the first person, but the line of many, many people to say, oh, this is truly a great thing to produce. I whisk the magnetic field through an object, and their little magnetic tops spin, and they impart a spin to my pendulum. And this would be great. And a lot of people, many people who are not in the mainstream, because there's no merit in doing an experiment which is really difficult to do. It's been done before, and not much to see. There's a whole lot of parameters which say don't do it, but when you're on the outer, you have to sort of pick up these experiments which are critical things which move the conversation away from the traditional model that people use towards the more quantum physics model. So you have to look at momentum and spin and stuff like that. And I'm building this, and I've got some wire, sort of build up in little by little. If you can imagine, there's many parameters that you could look at, and if you had an infinite amount of money and lab assistants, you'd go off and you'd say, "Oh, machine something for me, this, and because of this." Now, of course, you don't have that, and you have a certain number of power supplies you can get, and I've now got a 24-volt, 3.3-amp power supply. Now, that's a lot of heat energy, 24 volts and 3.3 amps, you get 75 watts of energy. You all put it in, most of the energy is parasitic energy, and so you have to design a magnet which is sufficiently large that the 75 watts can get dissipated. And essentially, for this, you need to design an electromagnet which reverses. And I've done that with two coils. I've got to buy these coils of wire. I've done it with two coils of wire. They're expensive coils. I think they're about $11 each. They're not $20, they're $11 each. And they're just the length of wire that I can build. And one has too low resistance, so I was going for a 12-volt power support, 1 amp. It's had too low resistance. And so I put two together, and I had to make it a certain size. Now, the area of your magnet really actually doesn't matter, because you've got something which sucks up the field lines on the inside. So if you build it big, your little object, it's going to be, will actually suck the field lines in. into it and magnetise it. So, but it has to be big and uniform since the field is reasonably good, and it's got to have a certain vertical and radial dimensions such that it can dissipate the heat. Okay, so there's no point building a little thing. And it's really, the heat dissipation is critical. If you can't dissipate the heat, if you put in 75 watts and it heats up to 50 degrees and it can't emit 75 watts, it'll go up to 60 degrees and, you know, keep on going up. So you've got to design it to get the temperature out. So it's a very simple thing. You can only build a certain graded magnet to the size of your power supply. Now I've gone up a graded power supply, I have to go up a graded magnet. So today I'll go and buy three rolls. I'll go, thank goodness, there's coppers all over the place. I'll go and buy three rolls of silver and construct it possibly 20 centimetres long, diameter about 10 centimetres across diameter, and you hate hand winding stuff like that. Now, the last time was a dog's breakfast because I wound it up once and I had to unwind it and unwind wine, and by the time you unwind it, it's super, all these kinks are just straightening out, so you straighten out the kink and then So this time I hope to produce a very, very beautiful device, so it won't heat up, maximum current through it. So I'll build that. Now, I had sort of played around with different couplings holding this ferrite rod. Again, one of the things, the ferrite rod's 8mm by 90mm long. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy a second ferrite rod that costs $5 each, and glue the two together. I bought some super glue, and that will make 180mm by 8mm. And just the great thing is that it means that your ferrite rod basically is doing most of its self-magnetizing. Magnetic field lines is constrained inside the rod, and so the magnetic field has been transmitted inside itself, so that takes a whole lot of other factors out. And it's also heavier, so you can increase the spring, so your rate of oscillation will be proportional to its rotational moment of inertia. You know what that is, RMI, and and times its mass. So you can build a heavier spring to it. Now I had latest today. Had pegs on. This clothes peg, this God's gift I had felt to actually mounting a ferrite rod, just fix it up. But then I had these problems that firstly I discovered that the circuitry that I was using to drive this, one of the relays was just unreliable. You know, I've got four relays in a little bank, two pole relays, and I wired it up, and one of them was just unreliable. It was de-energized, complete the circuit. So you energize it, the current flows one way, de-energize it, the current flows the other way. And so it took a little while. And this, I suppose it's all with therapy. Sorry, I'm actually doing the horrible thing of eating while driving, while podcasting. Again, there's nothing better to do in my entire life is, or fortunately my heart's spot on, but I've got to get weight and exercise down and eat correctly and all that type of stuff. So I pulled it off relays 1 and 2, and then we tested it on relays 3 and 4. With the Arduino board, it's so easy, but I just am killing myself because in their little plugs, I plugged in a shoved in a plug. So there's one plug now where I put it in, it's quite loose. My fault. Again, the Arduino board costs $10. These relays, I would say something on 100 milliseconds, 50 milliseconds, that time thing when there's no power. And on relay 3 and 4, you put your little screwdriver there and your little ferrite is completely magnetised all the time, and you can just feel it's a bah, like that when it switches. Now, ultimately, you want to switch so quickly that you don't feel it. And so, now, one of the things is that when I powered it up, it had a dipole preference. Now, one of the important things is magnets are not attracted to other magnets. They're attracted, their dipole seeks a lower energy in a energy gradient. How are we doing? We're doing fantastically here. Seeks a lower energy in an energy gradient. It's not an energy gradient, a magnetic field gradient. So, if you have a piece of ferrite with its clothes picks, unfortunately, on it, and it's got a radial dipole, that is, that its field gradient is intense, say, at 0 degrees, 180 degrees and weaker elsewhere, and your exciting field is strongest at 90 degrees and 270 degrees, it will experience the torque to go into the centre. And you can see this very much if you've got your pendulum there and you just switch on the field and it has a slight kick. Now, I've gone off and also I bought nylon thread, invisible thread. Today I used up my last plumbing tape and assembled a 6-fold symmetry cradle for it. This is just a real pain. I'm going to do, I won't manufacture it that way again. It took me about 20 minutes to put it together, worked it on, and so I've dutifully taken off the clothes peg and been warned, don't use the clothes peg, I need them for the clothes line. So I reassembled them, put them back on the clothes line. I had basically 3 clothes pegs which I had used. One to build the next generation of clamp, so I'd have it up there. And with the clothes pegs, there was no mistake about it. It would seek the lower the dipole here, and with this. These ferrite press rods, they're okay, but they have intrinsic quadrupole shape in it. And of course you get a real thorough understanding of field gradients, quadrupoles and dipoles. I used to have friends, now just see, let me through here, mate, thanks a lot. Lenses. Basically, a lens is when it's for when the particle beam, charged particle beam, goes through it. Your lens has, if it's away from the centre, it experiences a different magnetic field. So you have a series of quadrupole and octopole magnets in a row. So this a dipole is just two, you know, a north and south. Quadrupole is north, 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 south, north, south, around it. And this creates a zero with an edge on the edge on out of it. And I don't know. You just set this up. Whoops! Come on, mate. Oh no. This car's travelling very, very slowly up ahead. I'm in no speed, no rush here. The good news is that I've organised the... So at the moment I can sort of have the experiment running for about 10-15 minutes before it really begins to heat up. So I have to rebuild another solenoid, which is well worth doing. So I really don't mind rebuilding it all the time, because each time I discover something wrong, the clothespeak with, little wire spring inside the clothespeak, that was acting as a huge magnetic dipole. And it was swinging like anything. But it means that you are going to... you can design it for a minimum dipole, and then you can rotate your setup, because I've got an extra degree of freedom. I can rotate my rig, and then you've got your thing about. I think it's actually doable, because you can rotate your crystal, which is oscillating, such as at a zero dipole. Deflection, and ideally these things, when you flip the magnetic field in it, it responds within megahertz, within microsecond, fraction of a microsecond. Oh Christ, I don't know if there's a big... why the traffic's so slow here, so I'll have to wait for a while. So the important thing is that when you switch on the magnetic field, you see a little kick, and it's just really hard by eye to set up a perfect mount. And I did this six-fold symmetry. I don't know what I was thinking about. I'll do a four-fold symmetry, the advance on it. The problem is that if its axis of rotation isn't quite where it should be, it will spin into... it'll have a dipole where it's obviously... well, it will obviously have a dipole if it's not on its centre. There'll be more magnetic material off axis. That's a definite dipole. So it's just a matter of manufacturing it coming up. And... see where it goes. So at the moment, with this 6-fold symmetry one, I switch on the magnetic field and switch it on, and have the little trigger signal, which is coming from the Arduino board onto the relays, disconnected. And I switch it on, and you can just see the barest twitch. And so it's improving. Here's the police coming out. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know. Stopping mute. Oh, at least in Australia, there's police crawling all over the place. These are the traffic cops. So there's sufficient police around the place that I think everyone drives within the law. Okay, so this is up, and so what I'm going to do is I've got an nylon string, which is better than the cotton string. The cotton string is just loss it will with cotton string holding it, the pendulum rings down much more quickly. There's a Google car. Is that the Google car? Or some sort of car? I think it is the Google. It is the Google car. Oh, look at that. It's got a dash camera and a series of GPSs. It wasn't travelling slowly, it was travelling pretty fast. That's amazing. Imagine when they eventually get an autonomous Google car. That'll be a nightmare, won't it? I'll go up to the next version of this. And I've got to also buy plumber's tape. I'm out of my plumber's tape. I had to reuse some plumber's tape, which is sort of... And the plumber's tape is what actually binds the nylon to the ferrite in nylon rods. And now I'm going to do this a bit more differently this time. I'm just really trying to get my head around how you tie a knot. Like even tying the knot in the ferrite on the nylon, you get your six strands of nylon and then tie a knot in it. Now what it means is that even if you pull it tight, there's a slight torque. It doesn't open up evenly. Perhaps it'll be better with the four. So we're really getting down to small quantities. I'm slowly closing in on the production of this. I don't know necessarily. It's just an intuition that I want a long rod. It just means that it's got the same sort of rotational inertia, but it's got a much bigger orthogonal or 90 degrees inertia for moving about, and it just means that the rate of kick will be bigger. The kick per mass will be bigger. So ultimately, if you could actually just get a wafer, and that's got a low mass, but you want a large mass, everything scaled up. So I'm not quite sure if I want to go to 180 millimeters, but it just seems a real obvious way to get around the dipole issue of it, i.e. that it does its own self-magnetizing. So ideally, you could... The magnetic field is constrained inside your ferrite and goes all the way through it. So ideally you could have something a kilometre long, but obviously the field leaks out the side after a while. But it's, it's something that you could definitely do. So you can rotate your ferrite rod such that it's got the minimum dipole response when you switch on and off the circuit. And then you can rotate the apparatus, such as it's got the minimum dipole transition from the Earth's magnetic field. But I don't quite know how you do that for the Earth's magnetic field. I mean, if you've got a magnet there, like a compass, that will show you what the dipole effect of the Earth's magnetic field. And unfortunately, I don't have anyone... there's no one written up. There's no one actually doing this experiment for real. It sounds as though everyone does the experiment and works out. And I suppose getting the original papers would really, really help you. And so you can sort of see back in the day. My heart would take 7 years to, from prediction to viewing of it, 7 years to get there, because it takes so much. And the big issue is that it's not a low result. you get a huge result, and any parasitic anomalies mask the result, so it's sort of like almost hiding to nothing. And the other thing that I'm doing ahead is working out how to heat some wire to a temperature, to control the temperature. And I'm getting to the conclusion that the best way to heat some wire is to put it under a tea kettle, because that's the ideal. It's a chemical combustion within a zone, and that seems definitely the way to do it. So I think have a tea kettle underneath. So this is the next experiment, which is the Thompson's experiment. And I'm beginning to design it such that the two little legs will create an angular. So you've got the input wire and the output wire, and it has to have a temperature gradient, and then the direction of the current will mean that the wire will either cool or heat. And so if you have one wire cooling, the other wire heating, the integrated temperature along the cooling wire will be much, much lower than the integrated temperature of the heating wire. So you're getting a thermal expansion gives you an integration, but it also measures the temperature over more than one point. It's a really good way of doing it. Okay, now I'll just have to stop here as I go into the hospital car park. And so that's just a wrap up of where I am in this experimental nightmare I'm at working on at the moment. Just trying to see where I can pack. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.